We got a real simple plan. One me and one mission.
Georgia has won the national championship. Touchdown!
If you're a fan, you might think this is sports heaven. This might be college football heaven.
This is ESPN's College Game Day Podcast. Now alongside Pete Thamel, here's Reese Davis.
High risers at the NFL Combine. It is championship week in college basketball. And what did Pete do in Indianapolis? This is the College Game Day Podcast for Tuesday, March 7th. Reese Davis and Pete Thamel here. So, Pete, before we get into all of the things that happened at the NFL Combine and before we make some conference championship game picks, did you get to St. Elmo's, and are you a connoisseur of the cocktail sauce that once made a giant vein pop out on Jay Williams' head when he didn't realize how hot it was? I still have the picture on my phone. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
I did make it to Elmo's. Here's a little tip for those ducking into Indianapolis, as we often have to do on the college sports beat. There's a speakeasy upstairs from St. Elmo's that a lot of people don't know about. And at the Combine, it is it's a good little hidden gem place. Bruce Arians for years would park there and enjoy an afternoon cocktail after a long day of watching 40s and three cone drills. It was a big Matt Rhule spot back when he was in the NFL, and Matt would obviously go to the Combine too when he was a college coach at Temple and Baylor. So I did go up there. I did not have the cocktail sauce. I feel like there's a little bit of a novelty act to something that hot, right? Like, you're like, oh, you got to try it. You got to do it. And I've had it. But like, do you really enjoy something of that temperature? So
I do.
Really?
I do. Okay. Yeah, I like it, but it has to taste good. It can't be hot for hot's sake.
Correct.
And I don't think that that sauce is hot for hot's sake. The Jay Williams story, we were there for Champions Classic one year, and we have a nice room and in the back, and they bring out the shrimp cocktail. Yeah. And no one, or maybe he hadn't realized the magnitude of what the warning was. And he takes a shrimp, and he goes in, big, you know, big thing, doesn't realize, bite. Immediately hits him, you know, sinuses, whole thing. And I take a picture of him because he's not going to spit it out. So I grab the phone, I take a picture of him. You could see the sweat beads on his head and the veins sticking out. So occasionally I'll just send the picture to him to remind him. He also then later, as if to prove he could do it again, there, that was the wager, like our race for the ribeye. Mm-hmm. I've forgotten what the contest was, but the wager was the loser had to take a big, just a bite of it without anything else. He did it again, then did it on live television that time and lived to tell about it. So
I'm half Irish. And if I like look at something that spicy, I break out into like a pool of sweat. Like I just start to melt. So I've had it. It does taste good. I certainly don't want the fine folks at St. Elmo's to think I'm disparaging their hot sauce. There's a very funny recruiting story revolving St. Elmo's. At Clemson, they do their team dinners for recruits at Hall's Chop House, which is a really nice restaurant in Greenville. There's also one in Charleston. I believe there's one in Columbia and Nashville. Anyway, I love the Hall's chain. It's a great family restaurant, great steakhouse. So it was Hunter Johnson from Indiana was the number one quarterback recruit in the country 6-7 years ago, right? So
back on the team this year.
Went then back. He came back. Yeah, came back. Yeah. First grad transfer. Come on back, Hunter. Get in. Yeah. All in. The good people at Hall's, to make Indiana native Hunter Johnson at home, they spent like part of the week of his official visit trying to recreate the Elmo's cocktail sauce at Hall's to make him feel at home. So I don't know if that would be an extra benefit of sinus cleansing or not, but I always thought that was an amusing venture to try to cater to a top recruit.
Well, perhaps hotter than horseradish in Indianapolis was Florida quarterback Anthony Richardson, who soared up the boards. There's no denying his talent. His ability to throw the football, everybody knows he can run. He's the prototypical size. The production at Florida you know, wasn't what you would expect for a guy who's going to be at the upper part of the first round. And prior to Indianapolis, he wasn't going to be, I don't think. But now everything changed. How did that dynamic unfold as you watched it in Indianapolis?
Yeah, well, let me tell a story here. And I may have told this over the summer on the pod, but two summers ago, and some night in August, sitting around, it's like a Sunday night or something, get a call from a NFL scout who I've known for years and really trust. And he was like, do you want to look smart? And I was like, well, it'd be the first time for everything. He said, Anthony Richardson is like a better Cam Newton at Florida. So he had just gone to a scrimmage there. And this is before anyone knew he was going to start. Anyone knew that he's like, you know, Florida had some pretty good players on defense 2 years ago. So there was a lot of NFL scouts there. This is sort of like one of their scrimmages where everybody could get a look. And he was just like, now he reminds me of this all the time, by the way, I want to be very clear about that. But he was just like, this guy is going to be a top five pick, like no brainer, stake your claim in it, mark it down, the whole thing. He called the shot. And, if you go back to this season, Reese, Anthony Richardson had a really nice season. He had 17 touchdown passes, 9 interceptions, completed 54% of his passes, essentially. Obviously flashed some dynamism that, you know, is maybe unmatched at that position if you're not named Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen. And this is the fascinating Anthony Richardson aspect to me is if we were taping this pod a month ago, I would have said three quarterbacks go in the top 10 and Anthony Richardson goes in a slot similar to Lamar Jackson, who I believe went in the late 20s to Baltimore, like a annual contender, annual playoff team, aging quarterback, took a guy, redshirt type of thing. That's where, in my mind, he was going to go. That's where the mock draft seemingly had him. And that was a developmental pick. Well, like 10 days ago, he became like the third pick in the draft. And I don't know how it happened, but it happened on everybody's, like every mock draft changed. It was just sort of, wait a minute, Anthony Richardson's at 7, Anthony Richardson. And he might be one of the top 4 picks in the NFL draft this year. And he obviously flashed some things in Indy that were pretty special. I think he had like the fastest 40 time by a quarterback in a long time. There was just, and he's obviously a big, good-looking guy. He can really throw the ball. There's some natural. Lewis Riddick had some good analysis of the breakdown of his throwing motion and how easy and locked in it all is compared to Will Levis, who's just a little bit more arm-centric and there's not the same fluidity there. But like, this is the draft of Anthony Richardson. He is, to me, the quintessential boom or bust prospect. Like, that GM is either going to like soar into the playoffs annually or get fired in 2.5 years, whoever picks him. I mean, it's a fascinating NFL case of risk reward.
One of the things that I read, and I would be interested to know what you heard about this, was I don't know that it was terribly surprising to those of us who watched him play at Florida that he would go out and wow the combine. The question becomes, you mentioned the 54% completion percentage. Accuracy during the game. The one thing that I suspect sent him soaring up the boards was that he pretty much proved to everybody, based on what I read, again, because I was covering basketball, not there, he pretty much proved to everybody that he certainly knows where to go with it when you diagnose it on the board, meaning that when he got up on the whiteboard and looking at the coverages, he knows where to go. He understands concepts and coverages and all those types of things. The trick would be elevating that completion percentage so that when you know where you want to go, that it gets there accurately, because there's no question that it's going to get there with velocity and with a good throwing motion. Did you get any indication that not only wowing them on the field in those drills, but wowing them in the room on the whiteboard was also a thing to say, okay, this one little thing, or it's not a little thing, but the one thing that you would hold against him, that being overall accuracy and completion percentage and that type of thing. He's got all of the intangible things around it to know that that can be improved. And, you know, I've said this several times on the pod about Jalen Hurts. One of the things that people decide about quarterbacks is that they are what they are. They're not going to improve. Jalen Hurts is a case study, and Josh Allen, too, for that matter, got better, got better, got better, got better. And just because a guy's one thing as a prospect doesn't mean he can improve. And I suspect that maybe they saw the work on the board in the room and in the interviews and said, okay, we can work with that. And that guy's going to improve. Did you get any sense of that?
So I got in the sense that he was impressive, you know, in his meetings
with team. Let's remember his freshman season when he barely played, his quarterback coach was Brian Johnson. You just mentioned Jalen Hurts. Brian Johnson is Jalen Hurts' coach the last 2 years in Philadelphia. Oversaw remarkable improvement in Jalen Hurts. I thought Jalen Hurts made four throws in the Super Bowl that made me fall off the couch, and has really shown a steady progression from Alabama to Oklahoma throughout the NFL. Obviously, Dan Mullen was the offense coordinator, play caller. Dan Mullen, one of the best quarterback developers that we've seen, I think, in the last two decades in college sports. If you go back to Alex Smith, you look what they did with Tim Tebow. So obviously the Napier staff comes in. There's a whole new other offensive layer, but I feel like there was a great base of knowledge, and he was well taken care of from a quarterback perspective. So he was very good in the room. To me, I think the debate on him is a little bit of the Josh Allen debate. Can you teach accuracy? Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, 54% I would think that's among the lowest in the SEC, right? Like when you start talking those numbers, and much like Allen, the tools are there, the arm is there. So much goes into accuracy. There's so much that goes into timing. There's so much that goes into just the different nuances of the routes and the receivers and the connection and those types of things. The list of quarterbacks in college who completed less than 55% of their passes who thrive in the NFL is probably a pretty short list, Reese, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it can't be particularly long. So you have to believe that the board capacity combined with the skill set, you can marry them to make him a 65% passer in the NFL, you know, throwing against much more complex defenses and better defenders. So I think I think he's the most interesting player in the draft right now.
Because he can do a lot of things. I'm scrolling through some of the stats here, the advanced stats, because I think one of the things you want to look at with Anthony Richardson is, you know, his total QBR was 71, which is, you know, good, not great. You're looking at a thing that we do with our advanced stats things, his pass bends, you know, the intermediate stuff. Now, how much of that was drops? How many of them were catchable balls but may not be drops? Intermediate stuff was where he was down in the 50s. You know, the 15 to 20 was closer to 60. And, you know, the deep stuff, except for deep right side, and it's not a really big sample size. He had 4 out of 5, you know, throwing pretty deep right. But the short stuff boosted it. The short middle stuff was where the completion percentage was down. Now, how much of that was accuracy? How much of that was, poor routes, miscommunication, all of those types of things that factor into it. And maybe the NFL guys are looking at it. I wish him well, because, I mean, he is everybody you talk to, highly thought of. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he certainly doesn't have any of the questions that would come along with in terms of stature, like with Bryce Young. I think there's, you know, maybe some questions about arm strength, but there are some questions about Will Levis, not in terms of stature, but, you know, physical capabilities, that type of thing. You know, he's a big Will Levis, big physical guy, but he didn't always produce in the biggest moments in the passing game. You know, it's a really interesting thing, you know, because, you know, I thought Bryce Young handled himself pretty well. The questions about his size. I've always been.
How long have you been a short quarterback? Yeah,
exactly. Pretty much forever. And I still maintain that he would be one of the two or three best quarterback prospects I've ever seen if he were 6'2", 6'3". But now with being 5'10 and a half or whatever it was, he, there are risks there just simply because there's not a history of men of that stature excelling at the quarterback position in the NFL. That's just fact. That's the way it is, you know.
So who do you take, Reese? Say Trevor
Lawrence disappeared from your beloved Jaguars and you have a clean slate. and you can take any one of these four or five guys sitting there high in the draft, who do you take?
Bryce Young. I'd spin the wheel of fortune because I think with the way the NFL's changed, they still have to be tough, rugged guys taking hits, but the quarterbacks are really protected now. And there is a lot of Mahomes in his game in terms of arm angle and escape and finding and, you know, making plays. I think there's that intangible quality to him. The stat is pretty amazing, despite their, you know, by their standards, disappointing season at times. I read a note that I didn't realize during the season. He did not leave the field one time this season with his team trailing in the fourth quarter. Didn't leave the field. So every time they were behind, even in those games they lost, he either got them even or or put them ahead. And now, look, that would probably need to be verified. But if that's even close to true, it shows you a little something. And you certainly saw in the Heisman Trophy winning season what he could do. There would be a risk there. You'd be putting your job on the line with a 5'10 quarterback, especially one that's, even though he's done a nice job adding a little bulk, he's a lean guy. He's not a, you know, he's not a thick, imposing human being. He's never going to be, but he's done a really good job getting over 200 pounds to at least add some bulk to that frame. He's a great athlete. He's, you know, he's got tremendous vision. He's got guts. I would take that because I think while there are questions about all of them, there are fewer about him, and there's only one about him, and it's one that he's learned to compensate for basically his entire career. So I'd go there. But it's one of those things, man, that, you know, you had questions about Justin Herbert's accuracy and the occasional propensity at Oregon to inexplicably throw a dirt ball, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, he turns out to be a star. Josh Allen, you know, same thing, didn't perform well against, you know, their Power Five opponents when he got the opportunity in terms of stats. And now look at him, you know, all of those, Patrick Mahomes, you know, went a little farther down than his NFL career would indicate. So Anthony Richardson particularly is a guy who could wind up being the, how'd you not take him guy, but probably trying to mitigate the risk as best you can in the draft. I'd probably go Bryce Young.
Josh Allen at Wyoming.
His junior and senior year, or I guess his second and third year, just depending on how you carve it up with redshirt and whatever, was a 56% passer. So
that's right in line with Anthony Richardson.
It is indeed. Do you believe now he, to me, there are certainly probably other examples, but to me, he's the one quarterback in the last decade who had distinct accuracy issues and fixed them in the NFL. That usually does not happen. And Josh Allen did that. So you know, that's why I'm going to take CJ Stroud for my metaphorical, you know, local football team. Yeah. CJ Stroud looked like, I mean, on air, he looked great in Indy, but that is not surprising because, quite frankly, half the Big Ten teams he played were like playing on air anyway.
Hey, he's going, I think all of these guys have a chance to be really good. History would tell you that one of them won't work out, maybe more than one, but at least one of them won't. I hope it's not the case because, you know, CJ probably got some bad raps and at times and really redeemed himself largely with that brilliant performance against Georgia in the playoff game.
Woo!
Got them in position to win, showed a facet of this game that he had been not as eager to show in terms of running. I mean, I don't look at CJ Stroud. He's, you know, he's not a great athlete. He's certainly not the runner Anthony Richardson is. He's not as elusive as Bryce Young, but he's enough back there, and he throws a beautiful ball. And, you know, I think he has a chance to have a great career too. Real quick, we'll shift our gears a little bit here and start picking some conference championship games here. Would you trade the pick if you were the Bears, or would you trade Justin Fields?
That's a great question. There is so little functional
around Justin Fields. I mean, Justin Fields, when he left Ohio State, was a great passer. He was not a good passer. He was a great passer. He has not appeared to be a great passer in the NFL, but they have a terrible offensive line. They have no skill. It's a generally dysfunctional franchise with that has not set him up to succeed. So I would think I would trade the pick. I would keep Justin Fields. I also don't think there is a quarterback here that I have the, we're going to burn a former first round pick on that salary scale. Remember, so much of the NFL revolves around when you have the quarterback on that rookie deal and what you can do. Because then you're paying some, Daniel Jones is going to make $40 million. The guy was good for 1 year. I mean, that thing just throws your entire structure out of whack. So I feel like Justin Fields and his skill set has earned one more year of that. And I don't think there is a Trevor Lawrence, Andrew Luck, no brainer. Mm-hmm. Let's go. I think all these guys are all good. I think they're all, you know, there's two or three of them who you'd think about taking at one, but you are so far behind if you are the Bears, the assets you can gain from trading that top pick can fill in two or three needs as opposed to doubling down on something that may not end up being a need. So I don't think you can get a ton for Fields right now.
Well, here's why I would be probably a very poor general manager in any sport, because I would be entirely too loyal to the players. Brief aside, like I'm a Braves fan, lifelong Braves fan. They traded David Justice and Marquise Grissom after they won the World Series. I don't do that. Now, maybe long-term you need, I would never do that. They would be 142 years old. I mean, David Justice hit the big home run. Marquise Grissom caught the last out. They're Braves for life, period. That's why I'd be a bad GM. So let's go ahead and get that out there. I'm probably too loyal.
He's a sentimental guy, Reese.
I am a little sentimental. So I'll understand if people disagree. Let me just put it as plainly as possible. I'm not trading Justin Fields because I still believe Justin Fields is going to be an excellent NFL quarterback. I am not trading Justin Fields. What I would try to do, because I'm sticking to this, in this draft, if you don't take Will Anderson first, you're doing it wrong. But you have to have a quarterback. I get that. The art for the Bears is to trade the pick, get some more trade assets, and still wind up high enough at the top so they can still take Will Anderson. If they do that, if they can keep Fields and get Anderson and collect another, some more draft equity, that's what I would try to do. Now it's hard to do. That's easy for me to sit here and say, because everybody that you're trying to trade with, if you approach them with that, they know that's what you're trying to do. So that, sure, you know, that drives down what you can get. But if you can somehow orchestrate that, if you can pit someone against the number two team in the draft who they fear is going to take Anthony Richardson, Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, whoever it is that they covet. If you can orchestrate that and then still hold your spot to be able to get Anderson, that's the win for the Bears. That's the win for the Bears at the top of the draft.
So. Yeah, I completely agree. Will Anderson, not only through productivity and talent, but also character, is, you know, proven a pretty rare prospect. Where do you think Jalen Carter goes, Reese?
I still think he'll go pretty high, pending other information coming out about this now, about the situation, the tragedy at Georgia. But I still think he probably, don't you still think he goes, you know, top five to seven, top yeah, eight?
If he's seven? After seven, I'd be pretty surprised.
Yeah, me too. I mean, because he'll have a chance to answer some of the questions. There's still some time before the draft. And it's, as you've rightly pointed out many times, these guys are exhaustive in terms of learning about the people they're about to stake their futures to. So it's a tragedy surrounding them. And, you know, I'm sure that Jalen Carter, you know, whatever the connection to it, you know, has dealt with a lot of grief as a result of it. But as, you know, as it pertains to his draft situation, I think that ultimately he'll wind up pretty close to where he was going to be drafted anyway. So
I think that's fair. I didn't get the sense of any drastic drop coming in Indianapolis. And remember, the news literally dropped there, so it was fresh. But even the overreactions weren't like, he's going to go 23rd.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you want more March Madness talk, check out SV Pod with Scott Van Pelt and Stanford Steve. Championship week is actually Steve's favorite week of the year. And on Tuesday's episode, he has very prudent gambling advice for this time of year. Plus, Scott recaps his 36 hours in Breckenridge with his family, including an unburdening after a painful airport security experience. You can listen to your dad's favorite podcast, SV Pod, every Tuesday morning, wherever you're enjoying this podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
You want to pick some conference tournament champion? Are you going to be first? Are you going to be locked in on this, Pete? Are you going to be now? The best story's already happened in the Atlantic Sun. Speaking of patience,
oh, yeah.
And being loyal to your guys, the Kennesaw State Owls. Are you familiar with where Kennesaw State is? You probably are, right?
I am familiar with Kennesaw State. They are about to join Conference USA in football, Reese. I may or may not have broken that story. So yeah. I am very familiar with ambitious Kennesaw on the outskirts of Atlanta. And it's a school that has a huge student population.
Yes. It's like a mini UCF in some ways.
Huh. Interesting way to put it. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
In a metropolitan area, big student population, facilities are pretty new, in a lot of places. And they go, for those who might not know, Amir Abdur-Rahim is in his fourth year as the head coach there. In the 2019-2020 season, they went 1-28.
Then they That's
go
not
five,
good.
No, it's not. Then they go 5-19, then 13-18. And now they're going to the tournament. 26-8. And the guy who made the winning free throw, a man called Terrell Burden, was, I think he started every game in that 1-28 season. Wow. And how about that? I mean, that's the kind of stuff that makes you root for teams in March Madness. So are you going to be locked in? Are you waiting?
Oh, I'm locked in. I'm on the Furman bandwagon. Let it be declared that I'm on the Furman bandwagon. They have not made the NCAA tournament, I believe, since 1980. Bob Ritchie's developed a really good program there. The SoCon is a tough league, man. Like, yeah, you know, you had Steve Forbes at East Tennessee winning games like that. That is hand-to-hand combat in that league every night. They'd finished, I think, top three the last handful of years the Paladins had. And this year they won both the regular season and the conference tournament. And they're dancing. There's a little PJ Fleck in Bob Ritchie. So I think he's the kind of guy who's going to capture a few microphones and some attention this week. And to me, when I'm picking those first round upsets and looking, and they're all matchup based, you want to pick a team from a league that has shown it has some metal before, right? And the SoCon has shown some pretty salty metal. So I am I'm on the Paladin watch. You're free to join me.
How about this? I'm looking at some of their KenPom stats. Highly efficient on offense because they're second in the country in 2-point field goal percentage. They shoot just under 60%. From 2-point territory.
Nobody guards the two anymore.
I know. I guess so. I'm guessing, and that their whole philosophy, and I haven't watched them play a ton, but they're kind of that new school analytics driven kind of thing because nearly half of their shots come from three. So they have to be much like Alabama at the rim or behind the arc. And, they, they put a premium on that and sort of discourage the mid-range shot. So
layups or threes, that's the way basketball has gone, for better or for worse. So help us. And I think there could be a little magic in Old Firm. So that's one team I've sort of latched onto already. Obviously Drake has been consistently good for a long time here. The Valley is obviously another league that has certainly produced some memorable March champs. And did you see the end of the SEMO game in the Valley tournament on Sunday with when John Pelfrey's Tennessee Tech team nearly won on a reverse Leitner 30 plus years later?
I did. Wouldn't that have been something? Because that still haunts John. I once played golf with John when he was the head coach at South Alabama, and we get around to about the 10th hole, and I finally asked him about it, and he goes, "Well," he goes, "that might have set a record. Took you 10 holes." I said, "I've been wanting to since." I said, "I've been wanting to since the second, but I was trying to, trying to let it settle a little bit here first." So,
John Pelfrey, a good guy,
great guy.
And I thought they had won that game, obviously, with a 3-pointer with the foot on the line, and would have been nice for him. Tennessee Tech is a hard job.
Whew.
Oh yeah, that is a hard job in the Valley, even, you know what I mean? So the fact that he had him literally a shoelace away from the tournament says a lot.
You mentioned Drake too. Tucker DeVries, who plays for his father, Darren, at Drake. He's a really good player. And he's a guy that's a good team that could upset some brackets in the early going. Conference tournaments carry this odd weight. Sometimes people feel like they're undervalued. Billis has had a great idea, I think, as you kind of look for ways to pump some more energy into it. He thinks that the at-large selection should be made and announced prior to championship week, okay? And then if you're in, yet you're picking off teams at the bottom. If you like, for instance, if you're sitting there and you're the last team in, then the last thing you need is for North Carolina to win the ACC. The last thing, need is for, one of the teams off the bubble in the Big Ten to win the Big Ten tournament because they knock you out. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of it is already settled, you'll hear people say it's good that they get beat in the semifinals because they get to rest.
Yeah.
There's no team that's ever lost its first game in the conference tournament that went on to win the national championship. Do you know that?
I did. I'd heard some version of that stat over the years, and I guess I didn't know if that has held true. Didn't Jerome Tang say something last week where, like, some years we'd go to Kansas City and hope we lost early to go rest?
Probably. I mean, because I think that there's something to that, Pete, because last year Virginia Tech won the ACC tournament. We were there, and I mean, they looked like a machine. Mm-hmm. You're thinking these guys are going to be, a major problem in the NCAA tournament, but they'd sort of run out of gas, and they didn't, they didn't play at that same level in the NCAA tournament. And, I think pretty sure they went out. Yeah. They went out. Yeah. Got beat by Texas. Now it's, that's a, pretty tough draw, but still, you thought they're going to give them problems, and they, they went out quickly after winning four games in 4 days. So I think there's a lot to that depending on where your team is. But then there's always the UConn 2011 philosophy where they ran through, won the Big East, and ended up winning the national championship as well.
Didn't Syracuse lose in the first round after they made that Jerry McNamara run? I want to say it might have been 08. They lost to A&M in the first round.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Those nights in New York can be long.
You think before we pick these tournaments quickly, Jim Boeheim era continues next year? Yes or no?
Yes, but no one knows. I would say is the answer right now. There's a lot of ambiguity hanging over there, and I don't think the administration knows. I don't think he knows. And I think there is dramatic tension with your old boss John Wildhack hanging over there. The fact that they ended the season the way they did, Reese, certainly didn't help. And I think a lot of it's going to come down to, like, if you can say, hey, this is what we're going to be next year with Judah Mintz and a couple of those nice young pieces and maybe a transfer or two, and this thing can be competitive. But if that roster starts bleeding away, and it's another rebuild, I don't know if he's going to stick around for that, or they're going to want him to stick around for that. So it's going to be awkward. Like, most people who've been in a school that long are going to want to hold hands and sing kumbaya with the administrators, and everything like that. That is not how Jim is wired. So this is all going to be, it's that to me is one of the three most fascinating stories here, you know, hanging over the sport, non-floor related. You obviously have Texas. The Calipari thing has calmed down a little bit because they've started to win basketball games, which can calm the Commonwealth some. But yeah, and then Chris Beard is the other one. Does he end up back at Tech? Does he end up at Ole Miss? Yeah.
Kentucky, by the way, I believe is going to win the SEC tournament.
Yeah, I mean, they're playing really well.
Playing really well right now.
Yeah.
So let's start there. I'll take Kentucky in the SEC. Who wins the SEC tournament?
So I'm not going to pick Alabama. Like, I will start. I will start right there. I just don't think they are wired to win this thing. So I want to pick a dark horse or two. I'm not going to pick all the top seeds. I'm certainly not going to pick who you pick. So I'm going to take Tennessee.
Even without Zakai Ziegler, that's a bold pick.
Yes. Well, here's the thing about Tennessee is every single person in America is going to pick them to lose early in their bracket. Right. Mm-hmm. And is Ziegler out for the rest of the year?
He's done for the season.
He's done for the season. So that obviously that will certainly take a pessimistic outlook and darken it. But I do think they can still squeeze the life out of a game. And I do think there is, enough high end talent to make a push. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the Vols, Reese.
Okay, then I'll give you first swing at the Big East tournament. Who wins the Big East?
So when you look at the Big East tournament right now, God, I wish Creighton was playing better, because that's a team that should be working better than it is right now. I'm gonna go with Shaka. I'm gonna go with Marquette. I just think they've been consistently dominant in that league every year. I was tempted to pick UConn. They've been up and down. My dark horse would be Providence, because I like how they're built. I think Providence is a great NCAA tournament value team. I really think age has become the factor in picking NCAA tournament teams, and Providence is big and they're old, and those two things matter as you go. But it's just hard to ignore what Marquette has done consistently week in and week out in that league.
It's been great. Shaka is in a good place, comfort zone wise, but I'm going to go with the best team in that league, regardless of the seeding. And the best team in that league is Connecticut. And so Providence, that 4-5 game with UConn and Providence, assuming we get there, is a little scary, because I like Ed Cooley's team for the reasons that you mentioned. And they got UConn pretty good early in the season. UConn paid them back most recently, so now the rubber match. But I'm going to go with Connecticut there and say that they win the Big East as the fourth seed. What about the Pac-12?
So my early favorite, I'm going to tip my hand here for all our NCAA tournament podcasts. My early favorite that I think will win the NCAA tournament is UCLA. I really like UCLA. I feel like they're old. I feel like they're experienced. I feel like just being out west, they'll be slightly undervalued compared to those who will be picked to win the NCAA tournament. So I just think a lot really lines up for them right now. So I'm gonna go with the Bruins. But just let it be known that I'm on the front of that bandwagon.
I was asked on a radio show yesterday, one team that I would not bet against in a one game scenario going into the tournament. And I clarify, it was Dallin Cuff who asked me. Mm-hmm. And I said, now are you talking about a team down the line? He goes, no, whatever you want, a team that you just wouldn't bet against. And I said, UCLA. So I don't like it when we go together mm-hmm. like that, but I too am leaning right now to Selection Sunday when we do our podcast to declaring that the Bruins are going to win the national championship. So I'll go UCLA in the Pac-12, as well, which brings us, to the Big Ten. Who wins the Big Ten?
Oof, what an internal slog that league is. I'm gonna answer your question, but I'm gonna ask a question back quick. Do you think we see the same thing in the Big Ten this year, where like eight teams get in and one team or two teams make it to the second weekend?
Yes, probably. Yeah. It all depends on matchups, but that's sort of what I suspect. And they're all worthy, and they're all good, but they're all eminently beatable.
Yes.
Maybe is the best way to put it.
So. Yes. The least eminently beatable in my mind in this tournament is Indiana. I feel like they have the talent. I feel like they've generally played well the last three or four weeks. Trayce Jackson-Davis is the best player in that league, with apologies to Zach Edey. Boy, is Purdue just feel like the wheels are coming off a little bit too. You know what I mean? Just young guards, and there's seemingly a little bit of a game plan to beat them. They seem a little bit worn down. So, I just think Indiana, I don't think I'm going out on any limbs there, is the safest pick, especially with that double bye.
That would have been my inclination, but so I will go with a secondary pick in the Big Ten, just because you took the team that I was going to pick, and I agree with you about Purdue. I'm going to go with Iowa.
It's not bad.
I almost said Illinois. I was sitting here debating internally, are you going to say Illinois or Iowa? Iowa won it last year, which gives me some pause, but they can score. And that's always my default go-to, as Seth Greenberg will tell you. If I'm struggling over two teams, okay, who can score? Well, it's Iowa. They're third in the country in offensive efficiency. Chris Murray's been terrific. They're pretty deep. So I'm going to say Iowa goes back to back, because you know what? Forget that you took Indiana. I'm just going to double down and say it. Iowa's going to go back to back in the Big Ten tournament.
Up with all McCaffreys.
Yes. Yes. All right. So I'm saving the Big 12 for last. I'll be at the ACC tournament, which is another one that's totally up in the air. And I'll start with this one. I think Duke's going to win the ACC tournament.
I knew you were jumping in line to take Duke.
Yeah, I got to jump the line to take
Duke. Homer, Duke family ties. You do all their games every Tuesday.
That's true, but some would argue that the family ties are the other shade of blue with North Carolina, with my relationship with Hubert. But I think Duke's
playing. I thought you were going to say with Drake May.
Yeah, who I saw in Chapel Hill the other day, by the way. I told him he was going to owe me a cut for the way that I've pumped him up. But Duke's won six in a row, not against exactly the most stout competition, but it's more the way they're playing. They've got rim protector. The freshman guard, Tyrese Proctor, has really matured in his game as the season's gone along. It's been brought up several times that he reclassified, wasn't supposed to arrive in college until next year. Mark Mitchell, they got a couple of old guys coming off the bench, transfers from the Big Ten, and Jacob Grandison, who was at Illinois, and Ryan Young, who's at Northwestern. I think they've gotten healthy. They've put it together. Derek Whitehead's the sort of the X factor. I think they'll win the ACC tournament. Not only that, I think they are dangerous. They're going to be probably what, sixth seed, maybe something like that. I think they're going to be really dangerous in the NCAA tournament as well.
Yeah, they will be the most like overpicked seed of where they are, just because you can't deny the talent. I mean, the talent is the talent, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a little bit thematically similar to what we've seen with Kentucky, Reese, right? Like, you have all these great young players. They go through adversity. They grow. Like, they're not ready-made products just because they have a big Instagram following, right? Like, you have to fail. You have to grow. Teams learn how to play you. You have to develop physically enough. You have to learn how to deal with the physical play of college. So I really think that Duke is going to find some bulls. I think that is the best way to do it. I am going to use this time to talk about Virginia, who I saw play at Boston College the other night, and they were ghastly bad, right? Mm-hmm. They're the number two team in the ACC, number two seed, obviously earned. They're the number 36 KenPom team. And that's scary to me, right? Like that, you know, in terms of defense, they're not what they were. They're 34th. They were obviously a perennial top 10 team. Offense, even though some of those offenses under Tony Bennett were kind of, they could be drudgery at times and low scoring. They're adjusted for efficiency 73rd. So they're playing in the same tempo that they've played. They just aren't playing with the same efficiency level. So Virginia is just a team generally that would scare me some, just not only in the ACC tournament, but beyond. So that said, you know, I'm going to take the ye old Pitt Panthers, who slipped to the 5 seed. All right. They were, you know, for 85% of the season, the best team in that league. They are old. And I think there's a chance they could make a nice little run in Greensboro. I think it would mean a lot to them. You know, this isn't a let's tuck our tails and get ready for the NCAA tournament type team. So I'm going to go with the old team that Jim Boeheim thinks Jeff Capel bought.
You know, how about that? If that doesn't epitomize what the ACC has been like, Pittsburgh had a shot, not like a literal shot, in Miami to win the game. They win the game. They're the number one seed in the ACC. They lost. They fell to the 5, and they're also on the bubble. So it's an important couple of days for them. They've lost 3 of their last 5. They lost to Notre Dame and Bray's home farewell. So, you know, they lost to Virginia Tech, who's, you know, not quite what it was last year. So pretty important stretch in the ACC tournament for Capel's team. Now the best conference in the country all year, Big 12. Who do you have?
It's going to be hard for me to not pick Kansas. And look, this is going to be a tournament where we're not going to have 4 number one seeds in the Final Four like we did in 09 or whatever year that was. But I just really feel like when you dial in and look at it, I have a hard time trusting Texas for a couple consecutive nights. I have a hard time thinking Kansas State has the depth in the juice. So, you know, when in doubt, roll with Bill Self. Look, Baylor could obviously win the darn thing. You know, that wouldn't shock me, but I've not defaulted to a lot of obvious one seeds or jumped in line to take Duke when giving myself a chance. So I'm going to go with the favorite in the Big 12.
I'm going to go with, I mean, me saying this will probably guarantee that you get another Kansas Texas 1-2 matchup. I'm going to go TCU. Now they could be out. I mean, they play Kansas State, who's really, really good. But I'm going to say Jamie Dixon's team, Mike Miles, they kind of get on a heater here, and that they get to the championship. And since you took Kansas, I'll give us a little variety, and I'll take TCU.
Yeah. Well, Reese, I think the important thing here is people who listen to our podcast, I really hope do so because they don't want to work. And they want to sit at their cubicles and be entertained. And there is no better week of the year to sit at your cubicle and quietly put your browser up in the corner of your computer and watch glorious afternoon basketball like this week.
For whatever, there's a glut of regular season games. You can see your team every game some way, no matter who you root for. And that's a wonderful thing. But the one thing it does is that it takes the regular season and it makes it really difficult if you are an Oregon fan to get really excited about the Northwestern Maryland game. You know, all of that comes home and comes to fruition, and it happens once the NCAA tournament starts. Then you do care. You know, whether you've watched the Big Ten all year because you're a Pac-12 guy, or you know you're an SEC guy and you never watched the Big 12, everybody will be invested. People will be invested that love college basketball. People will be invested that never watch basketball. And that's why it's one of the greatest. And it is the greatest extended sporting event that we have in American sports.
And many people will actually be invested too.
Yes, they will. They will. Emotionally and otherwise, for sure. And we'll all fall victim to this. you tell yourself before you see your friends, you talk to somebody on your phone, you remind yourself, nobody cares what you did in your bracket. Nobody cares. And yet, because the drama is so overwhelming and the fun of trying to pick it correctly is so much, you invariably will tell people, oh, I missed this one. I knew I had that. I almost went here. And you know, and you're, there's that little voice in your brain saying, stop talking. Yeah. This person doesn't care about this.
Yeah.
And yet you can't stop yourself. And that's part of the beauty of it, I think.
So. Everyone is invested. If you will, we'll see if Teddy Thamel can beat us in his first bracket. He was around last tournament, but we didn't want to put the pressure on him at a month old to pick. But we think he's ready now.
That's a great idea. Teddy, find some way for Teddy to pick the entire bracket and let's see how he does against us.
Yeah.
My daughter, who's not really a sports fan either, once won her bracket simply by picking who won the most games. Didn't care about competition, didn't care about conference. She saw, looked at the records. Oh, they're 30-3. I'm picking them. And she won her contest.
She's going to have Charleston going deep if they win.
Yeah, she will. That's it. It's a tried and true method. All right, Pete, always fun, man. We'll talk throughout the tournament for sure.
Yeah, looking forward to it, Reese. Appreciate it. And our listeners can look for some amped up coverage here, conference tournament week and going into the NCAA tournament, some instant reaction pods. And hopefully we can capture the madness and help you care a little more about your bracket.